Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Eric Eager, Vice President of Research and Development at the Pro Football Focus, and he's also a host of PFF Forecast. He joins us each and every Tuesday. He's on the line with us right now. Eric, how are you?
Good. The name you're looking for is Jeremy McNichols, the backup running back for the Tennessee Titans, and he almost never carries the ball.
That's right. He's more of a receiver than he is a runner.
But, Eric, you understand the concept we're saying. It seems like even like Dallas, even with Ezekiel Elliott, with Pollard, that everyone, it seems like you got to spell your main running back and the whole 1-2 punch. It seems like most teams are structured that way this day and age, or they try to be.
Yeah, I think it's weird, right? Like, because, you know, back in the day, it was like you had, like, the clear delineation between third down running backs, you know, the Ronnie Harmons, the Amp Lees, those guys, and the bell cow guys. And now the bell cow guys are really good receivers, you know, like Kamara. And so it's
McCaffrey, yeah.
Yeah, McCaffrey, and even Zeke is a decent receiver and stuff like that. And, you know, what the crazy thing is like that, you know, the Saints would be clueless to not have Kamara in the game on third down. That means you need to get sort of a complementary running back that can run between the tackles. And that's sort of what Mark Ingram was. That was what Latavius Murray was, you know, and that's kind of what they're looking for this year, too. And, you know, a team like the Titans, they're sort of a throwback in that Derrick Henry runs the ball on first and second down, and they put some guy you've never heard of in there next to Tannehill in the shotgun on third down. And, you know, that's probably fine for them, but it'll obviously hurt them if Henry ever falls off a cliff physically, which he shows no signs of. But, you know, it's sort of the way every single running back goes eventually.
Now, Eric, I want you to comment on these couple of games because, you know, when you're a hot team and everyone jumping on the bandwagon, but I think this is what makes the NFL so great when you have these kind of games like, whoa, and you look at an outcome. Like the Ravens spanking the Chargers 34-6, and the Cardinals spanking the Browns 37-14. I mean, because we all were thinking highly of the Browns, and you look at their, you know, their roster. I think they're underachieving. And then, you know, Baker Mayfield.
Did anybody see the
there.
Cardinals coming out the way they are?
No, I don't know. Eric, maybe you did, but everyone to me was kind of like we talked in the offseason. They'd always talk about the 49ers, they're going to be healthy. You got the Rams and you got the Seahawks. Oh, and the Cardinals, they may be going to be 500, maybe a wild card. But they had them like fourth out of the NFC West.
Yeah, the Cardinals going into the year were 6-1 to even win the NFC West. Whereas the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Niners were all around 2-1 each. So they were certainly an underdog. Season win total for them was like 8.5. They might go over that by the beginning of November. very interesting because I think the Chargers one, you know, in hindsight was sort of seeable because, the Chargers were almost perfect on fourth downs going into that game. And, you know, if you look back at some of their earlier games, if they miss any combination of any of their fourth downs against Kansas City, against Cleveland, certainly if they miss those fourth downs in their own territory, they lose those games, right? And, like, the Chargers go into that game 3-2 or 2-3 as opposed to 4-1. I think the narrative is a little bit different on them, right?
No question.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
No
yeah.
question.
And then, Eric, but Lamar Jackson. I mean, you know, the Saints have dealt with a number of injuries, but I've seen Lamar Jackson now making plays and passes in the pocket. We all know when he can extend a play or make plays with his feet. But you talk about adversity in the running back position and everything. I mean, the Ravens, to me, you got to give John Harbaugh a lot of credit. So that's why, you know, when teams make excuses, oh, well, this guy's hurt, that guy's hurt, this and that. I mean, talk about adversity, and look where the Ravens are at right now.
Right, and Ronnie Stanley just went on season-ending into reserve today with an injury to his ankle. They already traded the right tackle in Orlando Brown to Kansas City. And all, you know, it just keeps moving. They used to spend, you know, 2/3 of their salary cap on their defense the last few years, and that put Lamar Jackson in positions where he almost never trailed. And when he did, he kind of had some bad performances. So there were a lot of question marks about, like, the long-term viability of Lamar Jackson. Like, if you pay him $45 million, you take away from the roster, how does that work? And, like, the Ravens had this sort of natural experiment this year where the roster's been depleted, and you know, not because, you know, Lamar's making a lot of money, just because there's a lot of random injuries to guys like Marcus Peters and Ronnie Stanley and Rashad Bateman and guys like that. And Lamar has stepped up, you know, fully. And as you said, John Harbaugh continues to be one of the best coaches in football. That team is dangerous, you know. And I think the truly difficult aspect of them is they're so hard to game plan for week to week, because Lamar Jackson represents something that you just don't see. You can't replicate in practice. You know, it's just a really hard ask to take down that team. And I think the only way you can is by scoring against them. And, you know, the defense is depleted. They don't have a great edge pass rush, but they haven't had one for a while. But in their secondary, without Peters, you know, Earl Thomas, and, you know, another year without him, they're a little weaker at safety than they normally are. That's where you have to get them, because you're not stopping their offense.
Eric, man, one of the guys that we've seen to really blow up this year, certainly with Cooper Kupp. And we talked, I remember a couple of weeks back, Terry McLaurin, who doesn't get a lot of ink, but I think he's one of the top five, six receivers in the National Football League. And I think right on the heels is Cooper Kupp. And I think if he can stay healthy in that offense with Stafford, sort of looking at him much harder than maybe Goff did, I think that's a guy that could really show up big time as the season goes along. Now, he's got to stay healthy, but, man, is he a talented route runner. His ability to set you up, get separation downfield, and he catches the ball so well.
Yeah, I mean, even in the 2018 season, the year they made the Super Bowl, we all remember, you know, sort of that Monday night game against Kansas City where they put up all the points. And we remember the Super Bowl where Bill Belichick, you know, figured out Jared Goff. One underrated aspect of that season was when Cooper Kupp was lost to an ACL, yep. I think, in Denver in the middle of that season. And you looked at how their offense went pre-Kupp and post-Kupp. It was really staggering. And he's a huge part of that offense. I think Robert Woods is extremely underrated as well, but Kupp is the star that stirs the drink there. Yeah, he's been fantastic. We saw that before when Stafford was in Detroit. His best seasons were with Golden Tate. And you know, Golden Tate represents a lot of what Cooper Kupp represents now, and you're sort of seeing that perfect mesh there. So I'm a little bit skeptical of Stafford. I've never thought that he is a guy that can sustain long-term success. But if you're looking at the betting markets and you see, you know, the L.A. Rams are a game behind Arizona with the tiebreaker. They're plus 140 to win that division. The next 2 weeks they get Detroit, they get Houston. So they're not going to get any worse in the betting market. So the time to buy them is right now.
And, Eric, I think we brought this up the last time we talked to you, or when I was on with you. Look at red zone and offense and defense as far as scoring touchdowns. If that continues and the Saints on the plus side of turnover margin, I don't know how they cannot help but win. And I thought, I don't know if they can keep up this pace, because it'd be record-setting, so to speak. I'm looking at the Saints, 93% success rate in the red zone, to say the least, is extraordinary. What, in the past two decades, the highest red zone percentage in a full season. The Titans in 2019 was 77.5. And then you throw in there that we top 10 on third down offense and defense. That's very promising going forward for the Saints. Now, the question I have for you is when I look at their defense, and right now as far as taking away the football, being on the plus side and that turnover margin, the Saints have intercepted opposing quarterbacks 9 times and held opposing quarterbacks collectively to a passer efficiency rating of only basically 71. I mean, and that is outstanding. Now, both figures rank second in the NFL right now. The Saints did play this past weekend. But you look at that interception rate where they're at, they're on pace to break the club season record of 30 interceptions set by the 1987 team. The reason why I bring that up, that was the first season the Saints ever had a winning season, and we won 9 games in a row. So I think if you intercept a few more balls this season, I think that helps you win a lot.
Yeah, that was a fun season. That was a such shortened season. So even you guys got to play three sort of replacement quarterbacks that year. So breaking that record of interceptions would be even more, impressive this year, since you know everybody's going to be non-replacement too. So that's kind of a cool stat. I look at this defense, and I think that it's extremely strong. It's probably, if you look at this week specifically, if you look at how much Geno Smith struggled against the Steelers, I think it's a better defense than the Steelers. I think you're going to see similar struggles out of Geno Smith. Geno Smith is an interception thrower, even though he didn't the other night. So I think it just improves even this week. The issue with the Saints, and it's going to be that way, you know, for a while because of their salary cap situation, and they don't have as much depth, can they stay healthy? I mean, an injury to Lattimore, an injury to Jordan, DeMario Davis would be devastating for them. But when those three guys are healthy, I think the sky's the limit.
Eric, the Saints picked up Forrest Lamp today. He started 16 games at left guard for the Chargers last year. And,
is he from Louisville, Mike?
Western Kentucky kid. Okay. He was a top 40 pick, I think maybe 38th that particular year. He's been a bit of a disappointment. They've picked him up. Your grades on Lamp, who, again, he 16 games last year started for the Chargers at left guard. He signed with Buffalo, got hurt during the preseason, and they released him. Your thoughts on Forrest?
Well, he's never really graded well for us. He was fine in college. We didn't hate him being picked that high. So, you know, there's always a chance. I think a lot of times, you know, when you're, you know, on the Chargers, for example, prior to Staley, not the most functional coaching staff in the world, maybe there's a way to sort of, you know, for him to grow. You know, we've seen it with Sean Payton before. You know, they are very good at developing linemen. Like, all the linemen on that team are pretty good. And even guys who, you know, for example, like Nick Easton, who was not a great Minnesota Viking, has been a fine New Orleans Saint because of, you know, some of the schemes that they do and frankly, the coaching that they have that a lot of teams don't have. So, you know, as a depth piece, it's probably a good signing. He has never graded well for us, so I would keep expectations low. But, you know, some linemen take a longer time to develop, and hopefully that's, you know, the case for him.
Now, Eric, how do y'all view this? Because I was talking with Christian and Mike about this. And we always say this, it does matter when you play a team. You know, when the schedule came out this spring, I said, I don't know, it's going to be tough to win at Seattle. Even though without Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater, with Sean Payton, we're able to beat the Seahawks up there. But I looked at, you know what, because you can't say we're going to win every game and how tough it is in Seattle. But I think we catch them at the right time. Without Russell Wilson, I mean, what are the odds are like you ever would have thought that the Saints are playing at Seattle and a 5-point favorite. Not a 1-point favorite, 5-point. Yeah. That's a lot of points.
You're right. I mean, we make the difference between Russell Wilson and Geno Smith about 7, maybe 7 points now. So, yeah, I mean, if you're playing this game, you know, in Seattle in normal circumstances, you're probably 2.5-point underdog or so, which I understand. This game opened 3. A lot of people are betting into New Orleans coming off of an extended bye because you're playing Monday Night Football too. But it opens 3. So the market is even like more bullish on the Saints relative to the Seahawks than I would have thought. You know, I think when you look up and down the rosters from player, you know, even with Russell Wilson in the fold, I think if you look at players 1 through 5 for Seattle and 1 through 5 for New Orleans, it's kind of even maybe an edge to Seattle. If you look at players 6 through 53, New Orleans, it's not even close relative to Seattle. Seattle has no depth. They're not very good on the offensive or defensive line. Their defensive backs are kind of a joke. Like, this should be a game that the Saints were competitive in, even if Wilson played. And without Wilson, it's a game they should probably win by a score or two.
Eric Eager, Vice President of Research and Development at Pro Football Focus. Thank you so much. Talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for me. Take care.
Bobby, Mike, and Christian, this is Sports Talk here on WWL.